When it comes to commercial banking, relationships matter. At Associated Bank, we've got you. With a dedicated team of relationship managers helping you secure financing to best serve you today and tomorrow. Visit associatedbank.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
A high-tech solution to finding the perfect fit from Japan's reigning retail king for online fashion, ZOZOTOWN. It could be an edge over competitors like Amazon and other heavyweights pushing into Japan's $120 billion fashion market. ZOZOTOWN's kept a strong hold on its turf since 2004, when it became the first company to lure in Japanese reluctant to shop online. Today, it wants to keep the lead with a line of custom fit clothes. ZOZOTOWN's custom line started with simple t-shirts and jeans, but this week it unveiled a new suit and formal shirt. The news sent the share price of local suit retailers tumbling.
The initial bite of these tariffs on $34 billion worth of Chinese goods won't be huge, and it will take a little while to ripple through the economy. But China comes back and puts some tariffs on U.S. goods, perhaps restricts U.S. businesses such as Walmart or GM from expanding in China, that it could get ugly fast with the escalating possibilities here.
How do you teach someone to swim and scuba dive in a dark underground cave? That's the challenge faced by rescue crews in Thailand, who are giving 12 boys and their soccer coach trapped in a cave for 11 days a crash course in underwater survival skills. Authorities have also said another escape option could be to wait until the water level drops and then have the boys walk out. The team were first trapped in the cave when a group outing after a Saturday soccer practice went horribly wrong. A monsoon storm struck while the boys were in the cave, and the rising waters caught them out.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's July 6th, and it's 5:08 in the morning. Happy you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day, the last of the week, a shortened week because of the holiday, but still the end of the week nonetheless. On the program today, we've got a full hour of Paul Nolte. Paul will be here from Kingsview Asset Management, Senior Portfolio Manager there. We're going to be talking about our portfolios, economic news, and the like. And Paul is going to, as I mentioned, stick around for the whole hour. Going to take some of your questions as well. So if you want to text a couple in to us this morning, 312-981-7200. If you have a general portfolio question, we don't want you to get too personal on us, but 312-981-7200. Paul will join us momentarily and stay with us through the rest of the hour. And in the last half of the hour, we'll ask him some questions and pull up your questions as well. Let's begin, though, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk of markets this morning. Mostly lower in Asia as investors braced for the implementation of U.S. tariffs on Chinese imports and likely similar measures by Beijing on U.S. exports. Upbeat economic data and gains on U.S. stock markets help temper concerns, but trading volume was light. Part of that has to do with the ongoing holiday week. Lots of folks have taken this week off. Futures are pointing, though, to opening losses on Wall Street later this morning, down 47 on the Dow, down about 8 on the NASDAQ, down about 3 on the S&P. In the rest of Asia, markets generally going to end the day higher. The Nikkei going to be up about 1%, up 241 points, it looks like. The Hang Seng up 133, the Shanghai up about 13 points. In Europe, markets are generally mixed. The FTSE in London is lower. Everything else looks like it's in positive territory. Oil is at $72.75 a barrel. Again, the big story of the morning, the world's two biggest economies have fired the opening shots in a trade war that could have wide-ranging consequences for consumers, workers, companies, investors, and political leaders, with the United States slapping a 25% tax on $34 billion worth of Chinese imports starting today. China is set to hit back as well, taxes on an equal amount of U.S. products, including soybeans, lobsters, sport utility vehicles, and whiskey. The Chinese government says that those went into effect almost immediately after the U.S. tariffs went into effect. The United States has been accusing China of using predatory tactics in a push to supplant U.S. technological dominance. The tactics include forcing American companies to hand over technology in exchange for access to the Chinese market, as well as cyber theft. We'll begin there this morning with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, I know I keep asking you this every week, but is it a trade war now? Is it officially a trade war?
Well, as you mentioned, the opening shots have been fired, and there's more yet to come. And I think, too, when you take a look at the reaction to at least the financial markets, this could embolden, actually, some of the political leaders and say, well, gosh, look, we had the market rising yesterday, and the market's been acting really not badly as we've been going through all of this stuff. So we could see a lot more. We've got more announced. We've got a total of, I think, $200 billion that have been announced to this point that'll be implemented later on this summer, early into fall. So it can escalate, certainly, as both political leaders try to gain the upper hand here and try to gain whatever it is that they're looking for in trying to, as Trump put it, fair and balanced trade policy.
I saw yesterday's statistic, and you're the numbers geek here on the markets, but down 10% this year.
For the
Dow.
Oh, for the Dow? No, the Dow is actually, it's...
or maybe it was 10% since last year.
Maybe, yeah. Well, yeah, I was going to say, because the high was the end of January, just in front of the employment report in February, and we're down a little bit from there, but and actually the S&P and NASDAQ are up for the year. Down from the highs, but up for the year.
Yeah, I think it was 10% since Election Day.
All the markets are up since election day. Absolutely.
How can that be possible? Weren't we at 25,000?
Well, but that's what I'm saying. Those are the highs. Yep. From the beginning of the year, the Dow is down a little bit. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 are both up. It's technology, and that's the interesting part of this, is technology is in the crosshairs of trade. Technology companies have a huge amount of their business done overseas, some of it here domestically. Their shares have actually been up and are doing the best outside of small cap stocks so far this year.
I've heard people say that because the economy is doing so well right now, this is the best time to have a trade war.
I don't know if there's a really a good time to have a trade war. We go back to the things that Trump had been talking about on the campaign trail, and this was certainly one of them. So he has been following through on the things that he has been talking about for years, and things that he wanted to implement. And this was certainly one of the top two, if not top one item for him was trade policy.
Things that, again, that China is going after, sport utility vehicles, soybeans, lobsters, whiskey, those are things that impact a wide range of people.
Oh, absolutely. And, it's been argued that he is hitting at the Midwest, and that's where you see a lot of support for Trump. Certainly when you take a look at the election results and where he polled very well and where he got a lot of votes, it's been in those parts of the country, and they are targeting those parts of the country in hopes to maybe turn things around in the midterm election, certainly for the presidential election in 2 years. So there's a lot of things that they're moving there. This is not done in a vacuum. They all understand what the political ramifications are, and they're trying to hit those areas harder to sway public opinion.
What will it look like when he gets what he wants? What would winning look like in this scenario for the United States?
You know, I'm not quite sure what the end game is going to look like, and how things will unfold. I think what we're looking at is, there's been accusations of dumping of product by China around the world. Certainly steel and aluminum were some of the things that were being produced there. One of the things that China has been working on for the next 10 years is to dominate the technology field. They're doing a lot of development and so on. And some of that has come at the cost of a lot of U.S. companies. For technology companies to do business in China, they need to partner with a Chinese company and essentially open up a lot of their proprietary technology. So China has been stealing a lot of that type of technology. And that's what is really, I think, at the heart of this trade war, is to say, you can go ahead and produce what you want to produce, but you got to do it on your own. You can't be taking technology, you can't be taking proprietary information and using that to your benefit, especially without paying for it. So I think that's really what we're looking for, is that that's the part of that fair that Trump keeps talking about, is we can produce what we want to produce. You can go ahead and buy from us, but it has to be done in a reciprocal way.
Paul, hang on with us. We're going to continue with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management, our regular Friday conversation with him. And we'll talk about the jobs report. Today is Jobs Report Friday. In our next segment this morning.
From ABC News Wall Street Now, investors come into Friday with broad gains. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed 182 points higher at 24,356. The NASDAQ Composite picked up nearly 84 points. The S&P 500 was ahead by 23 points at the close of Thursday's trade. New tariffs on Chinese imports have gone into effect, and Beijing promises retaliatory import duties on American goods like soybeans, whiskey, and SUVs to answer Trump administration tariffs on about $34 billion in Chinese goods. More Americans are getting to work. Payroll company ADP says the economy turned out 177,000 jobs last month, with the biggest gains in education and health care in companies with 50 or more workers. The unemployment rate now sits at 3.8%. And a company that epitomizes next-generation retailing is going old school. Amazon is said to be planning to print a physical toy catalog for the holidays, a lot like the one that Toys R Us used to distribute before it went bankrupt this year. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It's 521. We're on with Paul Nolte this morning, an SVP, Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management. Paul, it is Jobs Report Friday. You heard there from ABC News, 180,000 to 190,000 jobs expected to be added.
Yeah, and the ADP report came in a little bit on the softer side versus expectations. But when you take a look at the ADP report, kind of more directionally, the unemployment report will follow. It's not a perfect one-to-one. So we should see that 185 to 190, and again, as it has been for the last 4 or 5 months, the focus is going to be on wage growth. We expect that we're going to see finally wages get up to about 2.8, which is still about the midpoint of where we've been historically. When you look at wage growth, it generally tracks between 2 and 4%. We get up to 4% when the economy is really running hot, and we're not quite there yet. And again, when you go back to some of the Fed minutes that were released earlier, that's one of the things that they're certainly looking at.
Yeah, the Fed minutes, I'll get into the Fed minutes in a minute, because I think that's an important part of this story. But quickly, I just want to show you where the job gains were, at least in the ADP report. Education, health, leisure, hospitality sectors. What does that tell you?
Again, it's a service economy. You know, when you take a look at the ISM report that was reported earlier this week, both manufacturing and the non-manufacturing sector, the service sector, were both showing gains. We are a service economy, much more than manufacturing. Again, going back to the trade issues, one of the things that they're trying to reverse is make that a little bit more balanced. But that's where you're doing. That's where you're seeing a lot of the jobs. You're also not seeing a lot in higher wage jobs, and a lot of those that you mentioned tend to be more lower mid-tier type of jobs as opposed to the very high-paying engineering manufacturing type of jobs that we've seen historically.
To the minutes, they show that employers are having a very hard time finding qualified workers.
They are, and you know, it's a matter of training and you know, what do they want to do as far as you know, trying to fill those shortages. Are they increasing wages? And that's one of the things that everybody's taking a look at. Well, if you're having a hard time finding people, pay them more to attract more people. And companies have been reluctant to do that. They've been paying bonuses and that type of thing, which tend to be one time a year or one off. We don't have to pay that bonus again next year if we don't want to. If I commit to paying you 5% more in your wages, I'm committed to do that over the next however many years you're working for me. So that's a big difference in how companies are approaching those wages. And that's one of the issues and one of the things that a lot of economists are wrangling with employment as low as it is, If you're having that kind of trouble finding workers, it intuitively makes sense to raise wages in order to bring those people in, but we're really not seeing that.
Yeah, do you think it's it appears the employers are saying, no, I don't really want a bonus. I want the higher paycheck.
Yeah, absolutely, from an employee's perspective. And we've seen it in different policies coming out of Washington, and certainly a lot of the economic data supports it. The Trump tax rebate or tax refund, you had a $5,000 bonus, if you will. That didn't really make its way into the economy because people tend not to spend it because it's a bonus. It's a one-time thing as opposed to something that's going to be consistent. If I'm going to get a consistent pay raise, I will spend more. If it's a one-time, here you go, people are like, well, that's a gift. I'm going to save that. I'm really not going to spend that because that's over and above what I normally make. And I'm not going to see that again. So if I'm not going to see it, I'll probably save it. And that historically is what has happened with those.
Something else that was concerning that jumped out of the Fed minutes, companies telling the Fed that they're putting capital spending plans on hold due to this trade threat.
Absolutely. And again, you know, when one of the things that may offset a lot of the tax cut benefits is that cap spending. The thought being, I'm going to cut your tax rates to the corporations. I'm going to cut your tax rates. Need you to start investing in new plant and equipment and expansion. Now with the trade concerns and a higher dollar, it's making it, it will be making it more difficult for a lot of the multinational companies to export goods. And so if that's the case, as a company, I'm going to be a little bit reluctant to spend those extra dollars that I have on expanding production, et cetera, if I don't have a place for my goods to go.
That's kind of a concerning thing. Will we see more of that? I guess we'll see more evidence of that coming in the second quarter earnings reports.
We'll start to see some. You know, there are some companies that are already being impacted by it. We've seen the steel and aluminum tariffs already hit, and we're seeing impacts from Harley-Davidson, from the autos, and certain parts of the economy. It will take a little bit of time to filter through, but we should have a pretty good outline from a lot of the CEOs when they talk about their earnings and talk about their prospects going forward. We're expecting trade to be front and center in a lot of those discussions, and what those impacts are going to be and how we can measure that. It's going to be a little bit more difficult to gauge at this point, but we should get a pretty good idea of what those impacts are going to be and what the response of a lot of corporations will be.
Yeah, I should also say that the Fed minutes show that the Fed is happy with the way the economy is moving right now. They describe it as a strong economy evolving roughly as they expected.
Yeah, and so when you take a look at the expectations for Fed funds rate or for interest rate increases, it's a little bit less than 50-50 that they're going to go twice more this year. We're expecting one more in September. December is still kind of iffy at this point. The expectation has been that there are going to be three this year and then a couple more next year and maybe hold off. So we'll see how that unfolds. But right now the markets are expecting for sure in September and maybe a little bit less than a 50% chance that we go again in December. But that could have the potential of inverting the yield curve, which we've discussed in the past, which is getting flatter and historically has been a harbinger of a recession in the future.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:36, and thank you for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. If you're one of the folks who has to get up today, still has to work, I know a lot of you are still perhaps on holiday, so we appreciate you listening in. Paul Nolte here for the full hour today. Paul is an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management. And you can find more about Paul and his colleagues over at kingsview.com. Paul, we're getting a couple of text questions. We'll get to those in a second. 312-981-7200 if you have some general portfolio type questions for Paul. 312-981-7200. But I want to ask you, before we get into some of that, what you mentioned earlier in the broadcast, some of the economic data that we saw over the last week or so. Any of it that we should be paying extra attention to?
You know, the ones that we usually take a look at, certainly we're going to pull apart today's numbers, the unemployment numbers, every which way from Sunday. But we do take a look at the ISM data, the manufacturing and non-manufacturing data. It gives us a pretty good idea of how the economy is doing on a very broad basis, because we get prices paid in there. We get new orders, so we get an idea of what's coming down the pipeline. Prices gives us an idea of what inflation might be looking at. Are they paying higher costs for goods and services, et cetera? So those are a couple that we really take a look at and track pretty closely. Looking at those numbers, we see a lot of good news from the economy. One of the things that we take a look at, too, it's an interesting look at the economy, is payroll taxes. Everybody pays them. And we can track that. That information is readily available. And certainly we would expect to see payroll taxes go up as more and more people go into the workforce. We're actually seeing that come down. So that's a little bit of a concern at this point. Mm. Some of it, I think, may be due to the fact that we've gotten this tax cut. And so I don't have to withhold as much for my employees, or certainly for myself, if I'm paying those payroll taxes. So that's some of the noise that might be in those numbers. But when those come down, that is a concern. That means that not as many people are in the workforce.
You know, I mentioned the holiday. This is I'm sure a lot of traders are off this week. Wall Street's taking a break, even though it's open. Is there anything you can tell by the numbers of those who are showing up for business or not showing up about the health of the market?
You know, it's weeks like this that make it tough, because generally with lower volumes, you get bigger swings in the market. It doesn't take as much dollar volume to move the markets, because you have the possibility of more people on one side of the market or the other. You don't have a full buying and selling. You can stampede the market a little bit easier when the volume isn't nearly as high. So we do see it around the holidays a little bit. Part of the reason why we do see generally positive markets around the holidays, when you go back historically, the day after Thanksgiving, those are half days, and around Christmas holiday and stuff like that, those tend to be very positive for the market. And certainly this week has been a positive week so far, albeit very minimally, but yesterday's rally certainly an indication of that.
Let's take some questions here. A text question from 847. What tax changes will I see if I'm cashing out my 401k this year? I don't know if that means they're just getting out of 401k.
Taking the money and running.
Or if it's retirement year.
That's kind of a good multiple question. So with a lot of people retiring, taking their 401ks out of the company, you've got a couple of choices. One is to roll it into an IRA account, and it stays under that tax-exempt umbrella, so the tax man doesn't take it. So what you would do would be to open up a brokerage account at a brokerage firm, a Schwab, TD, Merrill, whatever it is, move that money into an IRA account. And then from there, you can invest it as you wish. 401k, you're restricted to those choices that the employer provides you. Inside of an IRA account, you can invest in gold, you can invest in international, more readily, individual stocks, etc. So if you do that, it stays underneath the umbrella, no tax consequences. If you take the money out and put it into your personal checking account, and whatever that dollar amount is going to be taxed as ordinary income. So if you take out $50,000, you're going to report $50,000 worth of ordinary income on your tax return. The implication is that you're going to pay, or you have the potential to pay, higher taxes. It pushes you into a higher tax bracket. If I'm normally making $75,000 a year and I take out $100,000 from my IRA on top of it, now I'm at $175,000. That'll be a higher tax bracket. Even with the cuts in tax rates that we're seeing this year, it has that potential to put you in a higher tax bracket. So what we try to do is we try to take that money out on a very gradual basis and be wary of those tax implications as I take that money out and spend it. We try to consult with a lot of our clients. We like to have them have a balance between their 401k asset, the sheltered money, and the money that's in their joint account, if you will, or a trust or something like that, that is non-sheltered, because then you have choices when you retire as to where I pull that money from, mm-hmm. as far as how I pay my taxes.
IRA is the best choice.
IRA is a good choice to keep it that way, and then it gives you those choices later on as far as how aggressive do I need to be to pull those money, take that money out for my own living expenses, etc. So again, it's something that we talk to our clients about as they go through their work life, trying to save money. Try not to pile it all into your IRA. If you have $1 million in your IRA and nothing in your personal account, that means then you're going to have to draw from your IRA. If you have $500,000 in your IRA and $500,000 in your personal account, you have choices as to how you take that money out and try to avoid as much in the way of taxes as possible.
And then there's also, too, if you're not retiring and you're taking money out of your 401k, you're going to get dinged on the penalty.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and one of the things, too, in that you do not have the ability to borrow against your 401k, or I'm sorry, against your IRA. You do against your 401k. However, when you retire, the company says, oh, by the way, that $10,000 loan that you took out, we need that money back now before we're going to allow you to roll that money out. So a change in employment, you leave one job, go to the next. You need to pay back that loan before you wind up retiring or leaving the company. So you got to be careful about those loans against 401ks.
Here's one from the 312. Everything is positioning to a recession on the horizon. I know you and I have been talking about mm-hmm. this before. How much should I pull out from my portfolio?
Well, and as we've kind of talked about, it's a gradual process. We're starting to see warning signs that a recession is coming. We saw some signs of recession in 2006, 2007, and that was a good year ahead of the ultimate top in the market and before the markets really started falling apart into 2009. Even in 2000, we were seeing some things that were going amiss in 1998, 1999, yet the markets were up another 20 to 30%. So you could say, you know, I'm going to go to cash today, and I'm going to wait 3-4 years before I redeploy it. But you do miss out on some of that upside. So what we are talking to clients about is, as we get these days like yesterday where the market's up 100-plus points, to just take a little bit of money off the table and gradually move from wherever your allocation is today to something a little bit more conservative going forward. So for us, for a client that we would normally have equally weighted 50-50 between stocks and bonds, we're going to gradually work our way down to 40% in equities, 60% in bonds. Over the next 6 months to a year, again, depending on how the markets react here, but we want to move more toward a conservative portfolio. We're never going to be 100% all equity or 100% all bonds for a particular client. We don't swing that wildly. But within a 10% range on either side of what our target is as much as we'll go.
I bet a lot of people are in the same situation I'm in with this, and this kind of goes along those lines. We're in the whatever fund mm-hmm. in our 401k, mm-hmm. and they sort of, you know, you just sort of leave it and they take care of it. It's kind of hard to do that allocation if you're in one of those funds, isn't it, or not?
Well, no, because a lot of the funds that you have, you'll have an equity fund, you'll have bond funds, and it depends on how you're putting your money into. So as you're making the annual or the contributions on a weekly, every other week basis, once a month, however you're getting paid, you can adjust those contributions. So what a lot of people do is, you know, it all goes into the equity fund and I'm just continuing to buy the equity fund. What we've done with a lot of our clients is we move it to, say, 50-50. So half of my contribution is going to equities, the other half is going to bonds. And then within that, you can also adjust what you have in the 401k. I can reduce my equity exposure. I can take $10,000 out of this equity fund and move it over to the bond fund, as well as adjust my contributions to better match the what my allocation or what my target allocation should be. So there should be some review, at least on a quarterly basis, because most everybody gets quarterly statements on their 401ks, to take a look at that and take a look at the percentage that they have, what I would call at risk, in the equity markets, whether it's domestic or international, and say, okay, if 25% of that were to disappear, the markets go down 25%. Am I okay with that? And if you're younger, absolutely, you're fine with that because you're going to be making contributions and you've got a long runway to accumulate funds. If you're in your 50s, 60s, and looking at retirement, that can be pretty painful. And that's where you want to be a little bit more on the conservative side, realizing that we're going to see a bear market again. It will show up and the markets will go down 20-30% from some level, maybe not from today's levels. And can I withstand that? And can my portfolio withstand that? And am I okay with that? Or is it going to be something that's going to keep me up at night and I'm going to lose sleep over or adjust my lifestyle?
I lose sleep over it all the time, by the way.
Well, trust me, it's a huge concern for a lot of clients because they're fine as long as the market's going up. But as soon as the market's turned down, certainly that's that sentiment of, I want to make more money than the markets as it goes up, but don't lose any money on the way down. And that's an impossibility in the world of portfolio management.
Speaking of recessions, here's one from the 312. How do I get growth out of my money during a recession? If we're going to go there, how do we make money?
Well, and it's the interesting part. When you take a look at the yield curve right now, and it's flattening, when we get to an inverted yield curve, that is, again, a sign of a recession. And in a recession, a couple things happen. One, the equity markets generally will be going down, and they go down significantly, but the hiding places tend to be in the fixed income market, in the bond market. When you get that inversion, it normally means that the Fed is going to cut interest rates, not raise interest rates. And it's actually not a bad time to buy long-term bonds, 10, 20, 30-year bonds. Intuitively, that doesn't make sense, but what happens in a recession is the cost of money starts to come down, and it comes down across the yield curve. So your long bond may be 4%, and it may come down to 3.5%, but that's a huge capital gain opportunity if you're invested in long-term bonds, long-term treasury bonds. Bonds provide a good buffer, and we tend to move more to the safety of treasuries and not corporate bonds or international bonds. And the reason for it is corporate bonds suffer risks of default. Companies do go bankrupt. So that additional risk we'd rather not take on. So we'll buy the safety of treasuries. The U.S. government will not go bankrupt. They have a printing machine in the basement. So they can always print more money, which is something that even Apple can't do.
Let's fit in another one here real quick from the 847. What signs should we look for from the Federal Reserve as major signs of a market downturn?
To be honest, the Fed is not concerned with a market downturn. It has changed in recent times, I think, and have gotten certainly a lot more involved in the financial market, certainly by the fact that they've been buying treasuries, mortgage backs, et cetera. And they tend to be behind the curve. They're not very good at prognosticating changes in the economy, changes in the marketplace. And they're not really that focused on, well, gosh, the market went down 10%, we need to do something. They're much more focused on what the economy is doing. So, again, taking a look at the minutes that were released yesterday, they're very comfortable with how the economy is doing. They were very comfortable in 2007 and early 2008 how the economy was doing as they were raising rates into that recession. So, again, the Federal Reserve is not a very good bellwether. As they tend to raise rates until something breaks. And then they go about cutting rates and trying to spur the economy on. So I wouldn't necessarily look to the Fed as a barometer of what you should be doing with your portfolio. It tends to be a little bit more in the rearview mirror than out the front window.
Linda from Twitter wants to know, is Paul available for consultations?
Always. Oh, absolutely. So, yeah, you can find us at kingsview.com, and certainly there, our email and phone numbers are there, and certainly drop us a note, and I'd be more than happy to chit-chat.
All right. Paul, great for having you here for the whole hour. Thanks for taking questions.
And absolutely. Thank you
to our listeners for texting them in this morning.
Enjoy.
And we'll see you again next Friday.
Yes.
Paul Nolte, Kingsview Asset Management, Senior Portfolio Manager there, SVP. Again, kingsview.com is the website.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are now off 75 points. NASDAQ futures and S&P futures are lower as well, headed to the opening bell a little bit later on this morning. Let's bring in Orion Samuelson for our regular Friday conversation. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning, Steve. And the big headline on the Allendale newsletter this morning, trade war becomes official. So we're going to be certainly watching market reaction to that today as China and the U.S. decide to fight each other with trade.
And it looks like they're going right after the folks who supported the president during the election, including farmers. What is the mood like among especially soybean growers?
Well, I think at the moment concern, because they keep saying we've been talking trade war for, you know, months now, and it hasn't happened yet. But I think the concern now is at the point where we'll see what happens, because will Brazil be able to provide China with all the soybeans they need? And will China really shut off soybean imports from the United States? All of this, even though we have it official now, we still don't know what the numbers are going to be. So, but yeah, there's concern. Anytime a possibility of a trade war, there is a concern. But a lot of people are still saying China needs us more than we need them. And when you take a look at the trade imbalance, there could be some truth to that.
Some people are saying this is coming at a time when the economy is strong and that'll help us get through it. But if you look at this from just an agriculture perspective, that's not really the case, though, is it? Because farmers have been struggling for years.
For 5 years at least, we've been looking at declining prices in agricultural commodities, and so that's another reason that there is concern. And now it's, you know, what happens when the markets open this morning. Right now, the soybean market is ticking up after hitting contract lows yesterday on the U.S.-China trade war. As a matter of fact, contract low, but now we're coming back just a little bit in the overnight trade, so we'll have to wait and see what happens. The other news is the fact the administrator of the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, Scott Pruitt, who has had a tumultuous time in that office, has resigned. And one of the things farmers liked about him was that he began to cut some of the regulations that have made their production rather difficult.
What can we expect on the morning show tomorrow?
Well, I'm taking the morning off. Max Armstrong will be doing the show. We'll be talking markets tomorrow, as we always do. And by tomorrow, we'll have the first day of the trade war results. So that's what they'll be talking about tomorrow.
All right. Orion, have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Orion Samuelson, make sure you listen to the morning show starting at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning right here on 720 WGN, tomorrow with Max Armstrong. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, July 6th. The U.S. Government issues the June jobs report today. Analysts forecast the American employers added about 180,000 to 195,000 jobs, and the unemployment rate will hold steady at 3.8%. The Commerce Department also reports on the U.S. trade gap for May. We'll get the EIA natural gas report and the Treasury strips report as well today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, July the 6th.